We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Previously on Gresh and Fourier.
How many times did Brady spit his gum into your hand?
Oh, dude, listen, you give me a couple of shots, I would spit it all in there, dude. I don't even care. Like, I can't give me all of it.
Do you take my dog for a walk? Yep, no problem. Hey, what do I have in my schedule today? Yeah, no problem. Not, hey, come over here.
This is Gresh and Fourier.
Tampa Bay records its first regulation win in the four-game season series. The final 3-1 Tampa Bay.
Andy Gresh.
I didn't think either team was really on top of their game, to be honest. It was I don't think they were as sharp as they've been, and the intensity and the emotion in the game was not the same as for us last night.
Christian Fourier.
Make it to the playoffs, and we make it to the playoffs, win the World Series. That's the way we're attacking this whole season. You know, I know there's a lot of doubters, a lot of people that don't believe in what we're doing or the personnel that we have, but I do believe that athleticism in this game where we're at right now, we saw it with the D-backs last year, we saw it with the Rangers last year. Hopefully that works.
Gresh and Fourier right now.
Just give me your leg, man, and ride it out. Just wait till I'm done.
On WEEI.
Sorry, hang on, y'all. I got to plug in my headphones. And there was college football talk going on between Fourier and Wiggy.
Yeah, I blame Wiggy for every time I'm late. Like, Wiggy is like the best friend to have, because especially if you're younger and be like, ah, well, I was at Wiggy. You know Wiggy, Mom. I mean, I couldn't like, I mean, he was... He wanted to go here, wanted to go there, and we got to stick together.
He don't shut up, Ma.
Man, he kept talking. I missed the exit. What do you want me to do?
Oh, my God.
You got to have a fall guy.
Oh, that is true.
It happens. It's good for when you're young, too. Usually your dog is a good fall guy, you know, good friends, your girlfriend. If you're in the NFL trying to find a big-time job with a lot of money, you can blame it on her. There's lots of things you can blame your mistakes on.
There's no question that you can fade the heat to the ladies if so choose, and if the lady signs off on it, you know, like if.
Do you think Calvin Ridley told girlfriend he was going to blame it on her? Like, hey, just so you know, I don't want to be rude. I'm gonna say it's your fault.
Yeah.
And you think she was okay with it? Well, yeah, she's never going to be in New England anyways. Well, why does she care? And she'll be a hero in Tennessee.
And for $50 million guaranteed. Yeah.
I will do it if you make me your wife.
Well, there is that. Maybe that's
how much is it worth to you?
Maybe that's where the negotiation begins and ends, let's say. You can follow us on Twitter, Gresh Fourier, WEEI. We got a lot to get to today. We will talk to our friend at WEEI.com, Mike Cadlick. He wrote the laziest column on the planet, really, and we'll talk to him about that.
What?
Yeah, oh, it's such a lazy column. Hey, what does everybody think of the number three pick?
What do you mean? What I sent in a nice little...
Here we go.
After he had to remind me multiple times, by the way. But didn't you send in a reply?
Oh, no, I did.
You, like, wrote something out, didn't you?
No,
you
did.
You did a whole column.
But what I'm saying is that if you read the column, it's literally... Cadlick sent an email, got responses, put it in a column. There you go, done for the day. I mean, it was...
I think that's being clever.
Let somebody else
do your work for you.
Well, you just exposed yourself.
No, I have told you multiple times. The way I got out of being on special teams?
Yep.
Messing up on purpose.
So that you should have been the one who didn't respond, and then Cadlick wouldn't ask you anymore. Any
but
of
then
that
he
stuff?
Texted me.
That is true. So you missed the email, and then he was like, hey, you're the only one who hasn't reached out.
I was like, what email did you send it to? Oh, yeah, I never checked that one.
Well, that's at WEEI.com if you want to check that out. Our guy at Mike Cadlick on Twitter. And even though I went into last night with big excitement for the Bruins, Fourier, they lose 3-1 down in Tampa Bay. They give up the empty net goal late, and it's really a couple of things. The Bruins actually benefited from a goal that I thought Billy Jaffe and Razor, and by the way, talk about being asleep. Wait till we talk to Razor tomorrow. Huh. That was a low-energy post-game show last night for our guy Razor and poor Jaffe. I think they were both traveling today. Jaffe had the 5:30 knot on the tie. You know what that is?
The button is somewhat loose.
I think the button was kind of done, but the tie was definitely loose.
My fat look.
That's nice. Yeah, as Sean walked in the room over there.
Sean's
you're
Sean.
Making fun of large people.
No,
but
stop it.
No, Razor's kind of like leaning to the side.
You think they're getting worn out just as much as the players
are? Well, they just had to work back-to-back nights. So,
those poor little announcers have to work back-to-back nights.
And then the girl over there, I forget her name. Sophia. She was like, "Oh, you guys doing your podcast in the morning?" They're both like, "We're just doing Bruins because we're traveling tomorrow."
Right, so they will do
turned into groaning hockey guys.
Yeah, because he does a podcast with Jaffe.
And they were and she was like, "Oh, any college hockey in there?" They're both like, "No, I'm tired. Damn it." They're just grumpy as all get out. But you know, they broke down the play under review, and Jaffe was very critical of it because it's like, come on, what are we doing here? You know, we're Zaprudering a tiny bit of being offsides or not. And he said even if it went the other way, he would criticize the whole philosophy of the, you know, we're gonna really break down after a play kind of cycles through whether someone was offsides or not. So they made the right call, but Jaff's point was, it's pretty picayune when you start doing that. However, the Bruins benefited from it, got it to 2-1. Middle of the third period, I thought their legs started to kind of wind down a little bit. I admit, Tampa was coming off a long road trip. Razor's the one who told us about first game back, long road trip. I thought, okay, I know the Bruins are going back-to-back, but maybe they catch Tampa at the right time. And Tampa's kind of rounding into shape almost like they always do. And it feels like, Christian, that the Eastern Conference has gotten deeper just like that.
Yeah, here's the thing that I wrote down was didn't show up on time and left early for the Bruins.
That's a great call.
They didn't show up on and another opportunity, but they saved themselves in that win against Florida when they didn't show up on time. They are actually able to come back and win that game. And then the very next night, you don't show up again, and then you just leave early because it's almost like they just didn't have the fight in them to come back again.
There just wasn't enough juice for the third period. I thought the legs got a little heavy in the third, and really the breakouts were a problem, and the Bruins lost the neutral zone pretty much all night long. That was an all-game scenario where, in the middle part of the ice.
I was trying to find, because they were shots on net, in the third period, I feel like they didn't even have a shot on net for, the last 7 minutes. It was just no, and you could just tell it was just,
there was no oomph.
There was nothing there.
And there was no
one. This isn't going
to
happen.
It was one of those Joe Judge's "no one is coming to save you" type things. Where
put that on a T-shirt and see how it goes.
They had to try. I do think a little bit of burnout definitely sort of settled in that third period, and it was interesting because after the game, Jim Montgomery said, "Yeah, I didn't think either team played great." He wasn't exactly overwhelmed with the way Tampa Bay played last night. It stinks from the Bruins end because, it's an opportunity. Even if you'd gotten a point last night, we talked about those games in hand and all that kind of stuff. So still making it difficult on themselves. Quickly to Mark in Medford on the Bruins aggression for you. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
I think the Bruins spent themselves against Florida. I mean, they beat the crap out of each other two nights ago.
Yeah.
And the Bruins were there last night. They were more there in spirit last night. They stayed in the game, but I agree with Montgomery. Tampa Bay wasn't that great either last night. I mean, they scored an empty net goal, so basically the score was 2-1. They stayed in it. They had their opportunities in the third period. They just couldn't capitalize on it. Their legs were like rubber.
Yeah, I think, Mark,
heavy legs.
It really was. And Christian, you kind of mentioned it. What was it, final 7 minutes or something like that? Yeah, it was just like a robot kind of motoring down. So I don't think it's a reason to panic, given that the Bruins did go back-to-back. And Mark is right. Florida leans on them. They beat, they bang, they scrape, all that kind of stuff. And, Yeah, it's not not easy to play back-to-back coming out of Florida. And again, Tampa is starting to figure it out at the wrong time. Like, I just hate that team because because it feels like every year, here's game 70 of the regular season, and you start to hear about how Tampa Bay is kind of rounding into shape. But ladies and gentlemen, here at WEEI, it is a day to celebrate because, ladies and gentlemen, this evening after the Rich Keefe Show, it is game one of 162 baseball games here on WEEI. I'd like to welcome you to the 2024 Red Sox season. There we go. Where's the we can't even do the let's go Red Sox. Go Red Sox. Can't even do that.
But there are some signs. I do think, because I thought we would do some sort of exercise. Okay, you could look at him as an optimist or a pessimist.
Mm-hmm. Let's go Red Sox.
You could make a point as to, you know, why you think they can be good, especially if you look at last year's issues. And I feel like they have fixed last year's issues. Well, not all of them.
Oh, really?
No, not all of them. Not all of them. Defensively, those issues I think have been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they are horrible at defense. I mean, third base, left field, you name it. They have made arrangements to make Trevor Story being hurt, coming back late. They have made arrangements so their defense at least won't be the reason why they lose games. Agree or disagree? It's an either or.
I disagree. Yoshida
out of left field.
I think it's going to be more about the pitching than the defense.
No, but I'm saying, so you think the pitching will be so bad that the defense will be overwhelmed?
Exactly. Or the defense won't factor in as much.
Because they hit them over their head?
Well, there is that. Maybe driving them out of the ballpark a little bit as well. Yeah, I sense some struggles for the Red Sox pitching staff. There's very much the, but we got better defense. And while that's true, and then you got to have everybody pitch to, like, their highest level that they possibly can, as we've talked about, for it to all kind of come together. And, yeah, there'll be some times where the defense will save the day. But, yeah, I envision, you know,
doom and gloom.
Swing and a pop-up over the fence, home run, Seattle lead 6-3.
I am forcing myself to kind of be excited for when I wake up in the morning and realize that the Red Sox beat the Seattle Mariners, mm-hmm. because I'm just going to be honest, not going to be watching this game.
What?
I can't stay up that late. It's not going to happen.
Little Pedro's on the mound.
Is that what we're doing? No, we are not doing that. Because I would not want that if I'm Bayo.
No, I wouldn't want to put that on Bayo, honestly.
It's almost like you're mocking me. It's like Little Bow Wow. What did he turn into? Little Bow Wow,
I guess
the old rapper.
He's now Big Bow Wow, or,
you know,
he stands on his money and now is Big Bow Wow.
Yeah,
is that
true.
The deal?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
As long as he's not associated with P. Diddy.
What is success for the Red Sox? Because we know they're not in it to win a division. We know that they're not in it maybe even to make the playoffs. And I know you and I will go through some of the betting markets. Right, a little bit later on.
Listen, they're talking like they're going all the way.
Well, there is a little bit of that. But I wonder just where – I wonder how fans are kind of rationalizing what is normally around here with the Patriots. 10 or more. You know, we're with the Celtics. Oh, are they going to hit 60 wins this year? With the Red Sox – have you reconciled, you know? Like, would you be okay with 77 wins if X, Y, and Z happens? Or something like that.
This has got to be some of the lowest preseason expectations that this team has seen in a long time.
A long time.
Without a COVID situation attached to it, right?
You know what it is? To me, and I was around for the whole before they won the championship for at least like 5 or 6 years doing sports radio, this doesn't even feel like that. And that was almost an era of hopelessness. We're never going to get over the hump. We're never going to win the championship. Then, of course, 2004 comes around and everything changes. But there's not even like doom and gloom.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
No matter where you work from these days, take Gresh and Fourier with you on the Odyssey app. Favorite WEEI.
Fourier, how would you describe success for the Red Sox this year? 617-779-7937.
Sure, it's a broad question.
It is.
It's a very broad question.
It is.
Okay, so let's try it. I would say you know what? Make the playoffs. That's what I would describe playoff.
That would be success.
I'm not going to sit there and say, you know, make
Alex Cord be manager of the year if this team made the playoffs, it feels like.
I don't think you can sit there. What does success mean to you if you're a Red Sox fan, right? Okay, you can't be like, you know, be respectable. Be in it at the end. We've tried that. We've done that. I would say no. If you're going to be the steward of this organization, if you're going to drive them into wherever the hell you're talking about, you can't be reckless. It can't be chaotic. I would say, yeah, you got to make the playoffs. That is, and if you don't, if you don't make the playoffs, okay, that probably means you're in last place again. Probably, because I don't think there's any real middle ground. I think I could easily say, hey, you know what? The last week of the season, make sure those games are important. No. Success in sports is playoffs.
I'm gonna sound, I think, as big of a puss as I've ever sounded.
Wow!
With this.
Hold on, wait. Shh.
Oh yeah, this is a real meow. I think sort of take, but I think if they won like 75 games and there were three or four young players that took a step forward, I think I could wrap my head around that. Well, look at it this way.
Hold on, wait a second. You broke. They got to you. Who got to you?
Oh, you mean you mean on the Red Sox?
Yeah, who got to you?
You know what it is?
What is wrong with you?
It's a dose of reality is really what it is. Like, I'm not going to fool myself into thinking that this is going to be an 85-win team, okay? Right? So you figure if you're an 85-win team, you're loitering around playoff contention, right? Which would make us feel good. But if the young guys didn't take the step forward, because for the Red Sox to get back to spending money, Christian, in my mind, they need Grissom, Rafaela, Bayo, and one other pitcher, position, whatever, right? One other young that you know you have under Red Sox control who step up and really take maybe not a quantum leap, but a big step forward and say, okay, I've arrived. And it is as weak as it gets. I understand. It is massively lowering expectations based on what we're all about around here. But Montgomery goes 1 year, $25 million. The best hope I have of a big splash is that the Red Sox are in it at the trade deadline and they can seize opportunity. Otherwise, how do they get back to spending? If they win 75 games and those young guys don't take a step forward, we're going to go through a 2025 where they're not going to spend any money.
I just think it's kind of funny how, and this is, I feel like this is where the Patriots are headed. What you're willing to accept now, and that's why I say, who got to you? Who broke you down? Who broke your spirit? Who literally just took your heart out?
Well, because you know what it was last year got me. They were 69-60, and I held an over ticket on their damn 77 wins or whatever.
So did I.
Right, that was Dunsky.
So you had them at, what, 85 wins? 85 wins, they had 78 last year.
No, I didn't. I'm saying
no, just
that,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
If they win 85,
if they win 85, it'd be, honestly, Cora would be manager of the year, and they'd have to give him an extension.
That's seven more wins. Yep. Than they had last year.
And that
seven.
Is, and you know what? In the NFL, they say to go from like 4 to 8, let's say, or 3 to 8 is a massive jump. But to go from 8 to 10 is an even bigger one because it's harder. And like you said, that's a 7 or 8 win difference, however you want to do the math. And it feels like the divide of those 8 wins for this team is like a gulf.
I was looking at the in August, they played the Dodgers. Oh, they split with Houston. So firstly split with Houston. Then it was the Dodgers taking over. I feel like that's when it really just was like, holy crap, they can't hold the line. The Dodgers took over Fenway Park. So it was really the Dodger experience. It wasn't the Fenway Park experience. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers, okay, and their Dodger Blue, okay, took over Fenway Park. And then it was just a circling the drain adventure after that, because then you played Houston again. You lost all four. And then I'm not even going to do the math on it because I didn't do it beforehand, but you're at 1, 2, 3, like 5 losses in a row, 3 losses in a row. You end the season with what? 5 losses in a row, 5 out of 6 losses in a row. You end the season with the win against Baltimore, but think about that.
Because they were getting ready for something
else. They were chilling. They were done. But think about that. Like 78 wins last year with the worst defense in the league, terrible pitching, tons of injuries. And you still won 78. Now, I mentioned to you in the first segment, I was like, okay, well, I mean, if they just remove one of the massive issues, which was defense, if they had 3 issues, if they can fix 2 out of the 3,
mm-hmm.
I was about to say, is 90 possible?
Well, I think they have a
is
different.
90 wins possible?
I think they have a different set of problems. Would you say the rotation is better this year than last year?
Well,
it has more potential long term.
Well, last year, at least you had a closer because that was the one issue the year before. Last year, you didn't have a closer. And then you get Kenley Jansen. Okay, now, hey, because that was why they were losing. Oh, my God, I feel like I'm in a time warp. I feel like we're having just literally the same conversation, but just at different positions.
A texter sends in to 37937, and good morning to the Twitchers and the texters. You can just go to YouTube, type in WEEI, watch the live stream right there on YouTube, and check out the Gresh and Fourier catalog that Coop's got loaded up there. Fourier, the 508 says, they were in contention in last year's deadline. Did it make a difference? No, they did nothing.
Blame that on Haim.
Says, and there you go. And
blame it on him.
That's what I was going to say is, it felt like the deadline last year is when within the organization it started to be, okay, maybe we need to put the constraints on, or maybe we need to not let this guy go make a move because we know we're ultimately going to shove him out the door. And then shortly after the deadline, Haim Bloom was sent off into the sweet goodnight. So I think there was a caveat to that, to the 508 texter. And if the Red Sox are serious, and we know they didn't want to spend money, if you're kind of hanging around at the deadline, it then becomes about opportunity. Who is available that you can grab? Is there a guy that is out there who can be a starter that builds or instills some confidence in all of us that this organization is still paying attention, but you're also taking this organization that is flush with prospects to be able to go get a guy at the deadline where it might actually be more cost efficient for you to do so because you can figure out what the fixed cost is. Somebody's making $35 million or $30 million as a starter, and the Red Sox are like, well, that guy's worth it. Then it's worth it to give up some prospects to be able to get a guy like that. That's what the hope is, because if you're going to sell us this full throttle thing, which already got debunked, and if you're playing okay and your young players are showing some life, that's how you re-energize the fan base a little bit, because it really would come out of nowhere, especially if you're just kind of a fringe contender.
The one thing I do remember Cora talking about years ago is how when you need to go on a run. Now, it's early, obviously, so how you benefit from going on a run is when you're above 500, mm-hmm. right? If you're 5, 6, 7 games above 500 and then you go on a run, well, then you benefit from the run. If you're already below 500 and you go on a run, it doesn't really help you much. It doesn't really do anything for you. And that's a sign of a good team. Like, you're padding your lead. You're getting ahead of the other teams. Like, you have a cushion in case you guys struggle or somebody gets hurt. That they seem like they had a nice little cushion. They had like 7 or 8 games above 500, mm-hmm. something like that in August. And then they just, I don't even know what happened. Like, the bottom fell out.
And it just was, and you just realize maybe it was because Bloom didn't do anything and their self-esteem was ruined. It felt like they just, every trade deadline, Chaim Bloom, like, sucked the life out of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get Schwarber. That 1 year, they actually made it to the playoffs.
And they go on a run. And arguably, that bought Chaim Bloom probably an extra year when you look back and think about it.
Yeah. And they tried to do the same thing,
and
it backfired.
Well, the 9-7-8 Red Sox about to get 100 losses this year.
No.
The 413 on the text says, don't be in last place. So what is success for the Red Sox? Phil in New Hampshire with Gresham Fauria. What up, Phil?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think it's a matter of perspective. I think for ownership, if they can win 80-something games and string you along and make as much money as humanly possible while fielding an absolutely incomplete Major League roster, they will do it. And for the fan base, I think we want the younger players to take a step forward while losing 90-something games and while revoking and while driving John Henry to either spend some money or pass the team to somebody who will spend some money. Because it's really, really wildly frustrating to have the number two generating revenue-generating team in the league spending like we're playing in Oakland A's money ball. It is wildly frustrating. We have an incomplete team. Garrett Whitlock is a stud in a bullpen. He's not a starter. Like, they're hurting us. And I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I love my team.
And
I hate
Phil,
them the way
I think there are a lot of people that are like you. It's the whole, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. And I would say this, Christian, I think what is going to get John Henry to move the needle? What's going to get John Henry motivated to spend once again? It's not going to be Rafi Devers and Trevor Story and guys like that having great seasons and carrying the team. That's expected. It's got to be Grissom, Rafaela. I guess you could throw Casas in there too. Continue to get better and take another step. If those guys take a step forward, then we can really, truly hold Craig Breslow and Sam Kennedy and, well, the people who speak for John Henry accountable for the, okay, the young guys showed some promise, so now how are you going to compliment them? Is it going to be, well, we're just going to bring up more young guys and go younger, younger, younger? Or is that when you go get the big piece, the big bat, the big arm, whatever it is, you need to compliment those young guys? My fear is that if this team kind of just sort of, you know, putzes around a little bit, but it's the veterans that are performing, they're going to look at it over there and goes, well, we expect that out of those guys. If these young kids aren't playing well, then why invest? Punt it for another year.
You want to hear a crazy stat?
Lord.
It's just nutty. It's like, you know, they had the exact same record on the road as they did on at home. So I would say first line of business, I mean, they were 39-42 at home and 39-42 on the road.
Wow.
Make the Fenway experience an advantage for you.
Yes.
Have a above 500 record at home. Just split it. Just split it. Just split that alone. Just start with that. Let that be a home field advantage. It isn't. You cannot be below 500 when you play at home.
I would dare say that if we did a study in every sport of the playoff teams, it would be probably under 2% or less of the teams in major sports that made the playoffs and just sucked at home.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's, you know,
that's almost like standard operating procedure that if you're going to be good, you got to have a winning home record. It's almost like a bare minimum.
Yeah, I would say, like, and I used to have coaches that used to tell us that, hey, you know, preseason, like, you know, group speak, group talk. Hey, let's win our games at home.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just start with that. Nobody needs to be. Hey, can we just win at home? And can we do this? Here's the other thing. Dennis Erickson, former head coach of the Miami Hurricanes and Seattle Seahawks. Hey, let's win at home. Let's dominate at home. Can we do this, please, guys? Hey, can we win the games we're supposed to? Let's do that, too. Win the games we're supposed to. Coach, what does that mean? Well, the other team sucks. We're good.
And did that happen all the time? No.
No, it didn't. We were always 500. This is back when you had 16 games.
Yeah,
right?
it would be try to go 6-2 at home, 4-4 on the road, get to 10 wins, playoffs, and then give yourself a chance.
That's it. That'll give you a chance.
Mm-hmm. And for the Red Sox, it is go so it would be go what? 42-40 at home.
That's fine.
You'll take it. Sean in Maine on the Red Sox expectations. What's up, Sean?
Hey, thanks for taking my call again, guys. I think I got to agree with Christian on this. I think I'm not thrilled with the way this team looks, but success for me is definitely making a playoff or at least being a contender for a playoff spot. I mean, when you look across the American League, the AL Central is a crapshoot on who's going to actually come out of that division. The AL West is essentially just Seattle and Houston. And then you've got, you know, all the Rangers as well, but even they've lost some significant pieces. And then you got the AL East. Just get in the top three. Just fight for that third position in our division and get one of those wild card or play-in spots, and then you've got a successful team. What that does for the long run, who the hell knows? Because Henry will probably look at it and say, look how great our team is. We're playoffs once again and not invest in the team, which is just become
you know what, Sean? Bro, that is that's a weird statement to make, but it's scary at the same time. It's almost like 2022 Matt Patricia, had they made the playoffs and didn't tank against Miami. Sean, you bring up a really interesting point. Let's say they do overachieve and win 85 games this year. Do they then look at it and go, well, we've arrived. We've got all these young guys. Let's keep the pipeline going. We don't need to go spend money. That's I never thought of it from the Sean perspective of, say they win 86 and are contending for a wild card. Do they all start to, you know, fill up their britches with, yeah, we've arrived. We're here. Let's just try to ride this out with not spending any extra money. That's a fair point. That's a fair concern and criticism.
Sometimes I feel like they're willing to do that, but they want a sure thing. I feel like they want a sure thing. I don't think they even want it to be close. It's got to be, you know, plus opportunity. It can't be almost there. We think we can do it before we spend.
I want
a sure thing,
bro. That's in trade. That to me, it's the trade deadline.
Well, yeah,
is where they would able, because if you go to bid,
when
then
is the
we
trade
know
deadline?
The Red
by
Sox
the way,
are, I want to say
is it
it's
usually.
It was end of July, but I think they might have moved it back to like August 7th or 8th or something like that.
That's really the season, by the way. I'll say that. That's really the season for the Red Sox, okay? Get to the trade deadline. Because if they're not really in it, if they don't make any moves, then the season is technically over.
July 30 is the deadline. And I just found a thing from Bleacher Report. Now, granted, it was in February. Of the guys who could be traded during the season or maybe at the deadline. And, of course, who's number two on the list?
Kenley Jansen.
Yeah exactly. I'm looking, thinking, who might be the starters? Who might be a hitter? Somebody that they might be able to, you know, get a piece that would fit perfectly. Second guy on there is the closer.
That'd be like a good bet, though, too, wouldn't it?
Guys
Kenley
Jansen
who may
to be
get
traded.
Kenley Jansen.
You know,
plus whatever.
I don't know if the sports books have gotten to the point of the player to be traded before the deadline. I don't know if we've gotten that deep into the level of risk from the area sports books just yet. You can follow us on Twitter, Gresh Fourier, WEEI. Don't forget, watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Speaking of betting, let's slide in a little bit of betting here. Obviously, Celtics are playing tonight. They're down in Atlanta because we have NCAA action here in at the TD Garden, which, by the way, is banged out. I went on Ticketmaster this morning. Say, can I get a cheapie?
Nope.
None available. So banged out at the Garden. Celtics will be in Atlanta tonight. But it's something that Jason Tatum said about sports betting that ties into this week's sports betting discussions. We'll get to that next.
This is Crash and Fourier on WEEI.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go, wherever you go. Just download the Odyssey app.
Every time I hear this song, I always think of Private Parts with Howard Stern.
I just watched that for the first time last night.
Did That's you really? It, yeah. Oh, it's hilarious. This is where Fred Norris is standing outside, like the bus pulls away or whatever, and there's Fred standing there with like
he's telling him with his two boxes.
Yeah,
and somebody bumps into him, he just doesn't acknowledge it.
Exactly right.
It's funny though because Howard right before he goes, you're gonna have to bring this guy in. He's all personality. He's electric.
He's electric.
And Fred may have had three lines in the movie.
and was happy to be in it and willing to do
you
so.
You see the Christian?
Oh, of course.
All right, just checking.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Hey.
Oh, no, I knew you were a little bit of a cinephile. Yeah, bigger,
and, I told you that I was listening to Keith the other day, and they gave a quick little, like, little opinion of the whole review of the movie Roadhouse, which we had talked about.
I saw the dork scores. They were not very high.
They were not. You know
what? Roadhouse. I was in that movie. Roadhouse. Yeah, the new Roadhouse.
The new Roadhouse.
No, but I remember when I told you this.
He was in the crowd.
Yeah, whenever.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, whoa. Yeah,
whoa.
I walked through this.
You were, I do not remember,
technically,
but that's fine. But you were in the original Patrick Swayze.
No, the new one.
Okay, the new one.
Yeah, okay. The new one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
We're talking about the new one. And correct us, I was in that movie.
Yeah, Dork would not have reviewed the old Roadhouse. It
what did they
the
give
new
it?
One.
What did they give it?
They each gave it a 2. Davey and Rich each gave it a 2 out of 6.
2 out of 6. Yeah, the Dork system works on 6 stars.
I went into the new Roadhouse movie with super low expectations. I was going to watch it on a Friday. Then I realized it was like 2 hours and 10 minutes. I was like way too long. And then Sunday afternoon, I got nothing going on. I was like, let me throw it on there. All the kids watched it. I was like, this is actually wasn't bad.
So
I would have given it a 3.5.
So the last UFC pay-per-view that we went to as a family, they were filming Roadhouse scenes. So when Jake Gyllenhaal walks down the aisle, they probably did that 4 or 5 times.
I was thinking
times.
About that.
Oh, yeah, you told me that. I told you about
That's
that.
Right,
and
last
then
year.
They had Gyllenhaal in there, and it was like, it wasn't Dan Margliotta, but it was the other Chris Taglioni. Chris Rigatoni is what he looks like. And, he was in there, and they were, like, staging it up, and you could hear, like, you know, they wanted everybody to cheer, and they would play. Like, he was walking out for – I think they were doing like UFC 222 or 7 or something like that. But in the weigh-ins, they did the weigh-ins over at MGM Grand, I think it was, because they were filming afterwards. So the night, so there's like the weigh-ins, and then there's like the ceremonial weigh-ins the day before a UFC pay-per-view. So when they did that, they were like, listen, don't anybody leave. We're going to film a scene for Roadhouse. If you want in, kind of get down on the floor. My wife and I didn't really move. They still did like the wide pan shots. But I'm curious to see it because my kids were like mugging right up front, of course.
No, it is.
And trying to get in there. And then they had Gyllenhaal come out and annex a part of it. And all of a sudden they're like.
Did he say Dunsky?
No, he didn't. It was before you met him. And it was like, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. We're going to shoot the scene. Here's Conor McGregor. And everybody was like,
oh my God, he is Dunsky.
And everybody's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like McGregor's just hanging out here. Sure enough, you get hip to the game that they're filming a movie, and people started like filling in. There were like people that were kind of outside the MGM Garden.
All coming back to me now because I remember when you went last year to that,
oh,
and we
dope.
Mentioned it that they were making remaking Roadhouse. I was like, it's gonna suck.
And Jake Gyllenhaal looked unbelievable.
Oh, he doesn't work out at all.
No, he's on the Rock plan.
Oh, that guy does not eat any carbs, but it was good. Like my expectations were super low. I didn't really think it was going to be any good. The thing is, like, he doesn't even play like he's not even a professional bouncer. He's just a fighter that they hire to, you know, clean up the bar. He has no technique other than fighting.
Yeah.
But unlike Patrick Swayze, who was an actual professional bouncer. There's a difference there.
I was also.
Worth your time. Conor
McGregor.
I was
also technically a professional bouncer at one point.
Me too.
Yeah.
I literally worked in a country bar. I had a rope tie. I had boots. I had the Wrangler jeans. I had the white shirt all the way.
I worked in the middle-aged divorcee bar.
What was that? Middle-aged? Oh, there was no fights there.
Oh, yeah, there were.
I worked in a country bar in the San Fernando Valley. I mean, it was the stupidest job I ever had in my life.
There is one place in Providence that has a very long staircase, and it was owned by the same guy who owned the place that I worked at that was kind of like the divorcee bar. And I worked there one night because someone slipped down the steps.
Someone.
They were trying to leave, or they were told to leave.
And they slipped. I don't know.
And they went
slipped.
All the way down to the bottom and went boom. And that was the last day I worked there.
So you mentioned.
I got blamed somehow. I didn't see the water. I didn't know the guy was going to fall. You know, it's like one of those deals. You know what I mean? But, yeah, apparently, how about this? The 774 broke down and got the iron claw. What an effed up family. Depressing but very good. I recommend everyone.
Don't watch it. You got me to watch that. I did. My wife to watch that, and we were both depressed for the next 48 hours.
Really? Yeah, they did a bad
movie.
They did
a horrible movie.
Well, they did a bad job of depicting Fritz von Erich. They turned him into like
the
old.
And even I mean, they
oh yeah, that's the whole thing.
The
yeah.
dad's a jerk. Yeah. Mom doesn't say anything.
Nope.
Everybody's like turns to drugs and alcohol.
Well, it was the 80s,
and then one guy is left remaining.
Yep, and he's kind of normal.
Got a lot of kids and grandkids.
Those they were procreators.
Oh my God,
they were right
stop.
On it. Von Erich and Fourier's, they're just
yeah,
just please, cranking
please.
Out the athletic
Take
kids.
That back. Take my name
Sorry.
Away from them.
Sorry, all right, okay. fine. They were the Atkinsons. How's that? Should I go with their real name or the gimmick name?
Oh my God!
All right, we got to get to Jason Tatum. I didn't mean to distract us on the whole Roadhouse thing. And we also have a story that I know Coco covered in news of the hot dog water at 7-Eleven. Yeah, we've got some thoughts on that. But I got to say, Christian Fourier found himself through some digging an article about Ron Wolf of the Green Bay Packers.
No. Yeah, Ron Wolf, sorry.
So, Ron Wolf, Elliot Wolf works here. How similar are they really going to be? Fourier's got some questions and thoughts for us on that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.